Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, Richard and I are going to be doing the show without a guest. We've done this several times in the past, and at least some of the time it's turned out pretty good. We're hoping this one of those times today. There was an article in The Guardian recently that Richard posted on the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page. It was about cheating. It seems like a chess player was recently caught cheating at a major event in Dubai. The article speculates on whether cheating is more or less common today in various times of competition, including casino competition. Richard, what did you get out of the article?
Well, in chess, this has actually been going on for quite a number of years. The advent of, cell phones, the ability of computers to get so small, and the strength of the computers. I saw that one of the best American players, his name is Nakamura, he just recently played a computer program that I think has a chess rating of over 3,300. So he was getting a spot, different types of spots. So the computers are so strong that now, at these big tournaments, I'm not sure when that particular incident happened in that article, but common at these tournaments is currently you're not allowed to go to the bathroom without a minder going with you who actually watches you the entire time when you go into the bathroom because it's just too powerful to have access to a cell phone and chess.
So this guy is accused of hiding it somewhere in the stall. So he would go into the stall and close the door, and then while he was making noises and whatever, would be looking at the computer, then he would flush, hide it again, wash his hands, and go back and play.
Yeah, and I think he was playing Petrosian, very well-known high-level player, and Petrosian noticed that he would make a move and run off to the bathroom, and so Petrosian started moving faster, so the guy was using up this time, and sometimes he would move immediately, so the guy felt like he couldn't run to the bathroom. And whenever Petrosian did that, the guy would make errors. And then when they found the phone in the bathroom stall, the guy claimed it wasn't his, of course, but his game was on the phone. So that part of it was kind of ridiculous.
And his Facebook account.
Yeah. They were also talking about pub quizzes, which, has become quite a popular sport. My brother does these things a lot.
In Singapore.
Well, yeah, but he used to do it in the United States, too.
He's incredibly good.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to ask him yet. But, I know they must deal with this. But, in a game like that, it'd be like having use of your phone on Jeopardy or something. Although Jeopardy, the time factor is so much, bigger, so it may not be as good. But, it makes me wonder, certainly there have been these problems in backgammon, in poker, and it makes me wonder about the future of games. You know what I mean? If games get solved and this ability to cheat becomes so much easier, it makes me wonder about the future of games, unless we start coming up with games that are more about creativity than strategy or something.
This article got me to thinking about the difference between being an advantage player and a cheater. Now, APs like to pretend the distinction is black and white. We're always on the white side, by the way. But I think it's a lot more ambiguous than that.
Oh, it definitely is. Yeah.
One current example is the Phil Ivey case involving edge sorting in Baccarat. To most listeners in our audience, since his partner convinced the casino employees at various levels to deviate from the set casino protocol, this made the game very exploitable. And that made what Ivey and his partner did okay. Many casino employees and at least one judge disagreed with that interpretation. And who knows what the appeal in England will be, let alone what's going to happen in the similar case in this country. Things are not so black and white.
Yeah, well, So Ivy's appeal just started in London.
So
we'll be hearing more about that, although they think it may take 4 months before they get a ruling. There's one distinction I want to make. The word cheat has, at least in terms of casinos, the word cheat has a legal definition. So people will say things like, that's cheating, when it clearly is not. What they really mean is they think that is unethical. So in the United States, for example, people will say, hole carding, that's cheating. You know, certainly many bosses feel that way. There are even players who feel that way. But it's not cheating. I mean, it's been decided by the courts.
In Nevada, not so much by the tribal courts in Michigan.
Right. Yes, that's true. The Indians have decided it's cheating. But my point again is that when people say that, what they really mean is they find it unethical. And I find the whole thing interesting, right? I had no qualms playing with a computer prior to the law changing in 1985. So something was legal in 1984 and therefore not cheating, and then the law changed and then it became cheating. Now, I didn't find it unethical to play with a computer. In other states, the law changed in different years. But each person has to decide for themselves what they feel like. What is legal is one question, and then what are you comfortable with doing is another question. So each person has to kind of decide for themselves. And I find it interesting that, I have one friend who feels that he had no qualms playing with a computer, saw nothing wrong with that. But for him, he would not play a hole card because he finds that unethical. So it's funny to me that each person is going to have their own take on these kind of questions. I mean, I know, video poker players who would not card pull. You know what I mean? Now,
yeah, I know what card pulling is, yes.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, some people are okay with that and some people are not. I don't know if the law has made a determination there or not. I don't think that's illegal. I don't think it's therefore cheating.
Well, about card pulling, it is most player tracking software today eliminates the advantage from card pulling.
Well, that's why I used it as an example. I would rather not use an example of something that might still be very exploitable.
It's interesting. If you look at, say, professional football, the closest thing we've had to an advantage team over the last decade or so is the New England Patriots. And they have been accused of pushing the envelope.
Well, they've been accused of cheating, too.
Several times, whether it was the deflating or the picture-taking, or there were several different instances, or even other a running plays too fast or finding a way to get around reporting in when an end is a tackle or a tackle is an end, that type of thing. If you're an opponent of if you're a fan of a team other than New England Patriots, you consider them cheaters. You call their coach Belichick and not Belichick. And this week, when the latest court ruling was Brady's going to be suspended 4 games, brought cheering in New York Jet fan kingdom and Baltimore Ravens and Indianapolis Colts. But the bottom line is they've been the best team. And most analysts would say Belichick is the best coach. A high degree of success frequently involves pushing the envelope.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And you know, the incident where they were trying to pick off the opponent's signals.
By taking pictures by cameras.
Videotaping it, yes. Right? Yeah. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, it's sort of like a old card. It's your job to protect it. That's why every time you see them on TV, they're holding a card in front of their mouth, right? So people can't read their lips or whatever. I agree. If you're a fan of the other team, you probably hate Bill Belichick. But, you know, yeah, he's pushing the envelope. You gotta kind of respect that, I think. You know, maybe sometimes they cross the line. I don't know enough about what they've done, but
in basketball, professional basketball, the closest thing we've had to a dynasty in the last decade or so is the San Antonio Spurs and their coach Greg Popovich. Now what he does is he rests players during the middle of the year, and the ESPN doesn't like that because they paid a lot of money to broadcast games, and when you have Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker sitting out, that hurts the ratings. So, that's basically all they've been accused of. So, which pales in comparison to what the Patriots have been accused of. Now, there's something about bicycle recently.
In the cheating front, there was just a woman bicyclist who was caught with an electric motor inside the frame of the bicycle, which, she of course claimed it wasn't her bicycle. It was the exact same kind of bicycle, and somebody gave her the wrong one.
like
the phone didn't belong to the chess player.
Are we coloring you skeptical?
Yes, definitely. I'm coloring me skeptical. So the cheating is, the article said, what was the figure on the number of college students who admitted cheating on tests or papers? I mean, it was
something like 3/4 is 75%.
Yeah, that's what So, and they said, you know, it rises depending on the degree of, the chance of getting caught and the consequences of getting caught.
Well, that's economists of the Chicago School. That's kind of the Gary Becker school of punishment that was very popular during the 1970s. Some recent work by Dan Ariely and others have shown that it's quite a bit different. For example, having people sign a pledge that they do not cheat just before they do something, having no way to enforce it, but just signing a pledge really cuts down on cheating. Or having a...
copy the Ten Commandments, I think they
mentioned. Yeah, the Ten Commandments. Or in one case at MIT, they had to say that they agreed that their actions obeyed the MIT honor code, which was unusual because MIT didn't have an honor code. So there's more complicated to how easy is it to get caught and what's the penalty if you get caught. But it's a complicated issue.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think a good aspect of that, well, I don't know if you call this cheating, but the use of fake ID in casinos.
Okay.
Right. I don't consider that cheating, but in some cases it's illegal, depending on what kind of ID it is. But again, you know, people that do it, I for one do not, but people that do it take exactly that into the equation, is what are the chances of getting caught and what are the consequences if you get caught. Now, in the last few years, the consequences, it used to be that the consequences were zero. You know, people got caught all the time with fake IDs and nothing ever came of it. But in the last few years, that's all changed. Part of that, I think it has to do with the Patriot Act and 9/11, and we've just been getting, you know, a lot more paranoid about who people are and all that. So fake IDs have become a much bigger deal. So, you know, nowadays it's a much tougher proposition.
All right. We're going to move on to another subject. In a few weeks, Betfair, now known as Paddy Power Betfair because the company's merged, is opening a horse racing betting exchange in New Jersey at the Monmouth Racetrack. Richard, what is a betting exchange and how does this differ from regular betting on horse racing?
So a betting exchange is just that. It's an exchange where people bet against each other as opposed to a bookie. it's much better than the parimutuel system for the players because the rake is only 5%. And in normal parimutuel pools, the rake can go from
20 to 30.
Yeah, even, well, 16 to 35. I mean, some of the worst takeouts are above 30. Yeah, so it's a much better deal for the players. Much more opportunities for professionals. I would love to see this spread not just to horses, but mainly to sports. Because if we could get sports betting exchanges here in Nevada, you wouldn't have all this problem getting money down, you know, because nobody, there's no casino that has to take a swing if you have a betting exchange. It'd be a great thing.
Would the predictit.org, where you can bet who you think's going to be the next president of the United States, among many other things, would that be a betting exchange?
That is exactly a betting exchange. And they got a ruling from, I forgot who they got the ruling from, maybe SEC, basically saying, you know, we will not go after you if you open. You know, we will allow this. So it's legal gambling on elections, on the primaries, on the, there's all kinds of things you can bet on there. Maximum of like $850. And it's all based on a $1 contract, right? So if you want to bet the yes, you might pay 63 cents per dollar. And if yes comes in, you get back, you know, $1.37 profit. So it might be 63 and 36. There might be a 1 cent spread in there.
I think the spread's bigger than that. And there's something like a 10%.
No. The cash out fee, right? If you win money, well, even if you lose money, if you cash out, you give up 10% of whatever you cash out. But the actual spread on the bet itself is only 1%.
Uh-huh. So as long as you lose everything, then you're getting a really good gamble.
Right.
Okay. Good. I recently read a book called Molly's Game. It was written by Molly Bloom. And we'd love to get Molly on the air. Right now, it doesn't seem like she's been doing interviews. But I want to talk about the book anyway. I'm not going to cover everything, because if you think this is a good discussion, you probably should go pick up the book yourself.
Very entertaining book.
Okay. The story is about Molly running very big poker games, mainly in Los Angeles, later New York. She was a waitress at an exclusive restaurant in Los Angeles. And she was in her early 20s, and the owner of this restaurant, this billionaire, she called him Reardon Green in the book. Now, he's portrayed as a smart, rich, and a son of a bitch to work for. He demands dinner reservations at sold-out restaurants, and Molly learns how to deliver. He buys a steak in the Viper Room. This is a nightclub in the Hollywood area. And for a time, he decides that he wants to have a big poker game in the back room with a lot of well-known actors. He gets Tobey Maguire, Leonardo DiCaprio, later Ben Affleck, and a few other biggies in the Hollywood area. Those would be the biggest names that I would recognize. Richard's more into the Hollywood scene, so he might have recognized a few of the others. Molly's tips the first night were $3,000. Later they became much, much, much bigger.
Let me break in there. I played in a couple of games in Hollywood, and a guy turned me on to the game, and I called this contact, and my first question to him was, "What is the rake?" And he kept trying to dodge the question, and he kept saying, "Look, it doesn't matter because the game is so soft. It's these Hollywood people, and they can't play at all, and blah, blah, blah." And I forget what the rake was, but it was just obscene. Maybe it was a $50 max per pot or something like that. And so in that case, I didn't go. I later went to another one where the rake was a little bit more reasonable, but again, way, way higher than you would pay in a card room there in California that you can easily drive to. They would have very hot girls serving food and drinks and all that kind of stuff. But again, the rake was too high. And then the guy tried to get me to come again, and this time he said, "We're no longer charging a rake, but the winners have to pay 10%. And anyway, so I didn't. But I've also heard of numerous stories of, cheating going on in those games. So, I would not play in them. I mean, one of the things I thought really interesting was she went to an attorney who basically said, because a lot of these games get in trouble because of, they also are bookmaking and like there was just one in, I think, San Clemente or somewhere north of San Diego that was just recently busted. A lot of people got arrested at this huge poker game there, but they were bookmaking and selling drugs and stuff like that.
Hookers were involved.
Hookers, maybe. Loan sharking, yeah, all that stuff. But what the lawyers told her, as long as you keep all that stuff out of it and you don't charge a rake, then it was clean. There was no legal issue, which is what she did. There was no rake in her game, but people tipped her.
Yes.
So I guess that was the format my guy was trying to go to, and he was sort of recommending that the tip was 10% of whatever the winners win.
Okay, good. Now, Reardon, her boss, eventually cut her out of the game. He was punishing her for something. He regularly did this. So she went to one of the big players and started the game at the big player's house. And she made herself indispensable to the players by being the girl who could do anything for her players. For those of you whose mind goes in that direction, sexual services were not provided. She was
At least not by her.
Not by her. Now, Tobey Maguire in this book comes across as a real jerk.
Yeah, they're making a movie out of this too. Yes. I'm sure Tobey Maguire will not be playing himself. He was really a jerk. The biggest winner in the game. He showed up one week with a automatic shuffling machine and insisted that she use this machine. Which, great, right? Why not?
Helps prevent cheating.
Right, and speeds the game up. And then within a week or two, he was telling her, "Now, that's my machine. I think you should be paying me rent for the machine." Now, this is a guy who's winning six figures every week in this game, and he wants rent on his machine. She says, "Okay, well, what do you think is fair?" He says, $200. Which I thought that was pretty amazing that he would want $200 to rent, his machine.
On another occasion, he apparently was in a hole, came back, and was going to leave Molly a $1,000 tip. But he says, Molly, to get this tip, I want you to get on your knees and bark like a seal.
Yeah.
Which, for some reason, Molly found very demeaning and didn't do it.
Yeah.
And so he stiffed her that night. And
and ultimately, he basically got her pushed out of her own game because he went to the other players and told them it was, you know, terrible how much money she was making off the game and that they didn't need her and, you know, they should just hold the game themselves and, you know. Yeah, quite an asshole.
So, eventually she goes to New York, tries a similar setup. They have something called the mob in New York. Had a little bit of issues there and eventually was forced to do things and the feds shut her down. She got off relatively lightly, but shut down. Interesting things in the book. One was, collecting from players when they lose.
That seemed, by the way, to be the hardest part of the job was the players all were playing on credit. So
some she made put up cash and, you know, how she made that decision. And, I have money for you, but it's out in Palm Springs. Will you drive 100 miles to pick up the money? And the answer always had to be yes.
Right, right.
Because if they're ready to give you money, you got to go get it because the guys who won want their cut.
Right. Yep. I mean, that was always a problem in backgammon and,
I wish I had read this book before I was playing backgammon. Of course, the events in the book happened 15 years after I retired.
Right, but even if you knew, I mean, there were people that I played that I knew, I would say we're going to settle every this many points, and you got to this many points, and I would try to keep the number low, and already they couldn't pay, you know what I mean? That was part of why I gave up backgammon. I just didn't like the players that were worth the most money were the people that you would want to play with the least just because they were so distasteful to play with, you know. Mike Svobodny talked about it a lot in Gambling Wizards, the bad players, they get to throw their dice cup across the room. They get to verbally abuse you. They get to do whatever they want, right? Because they're the fish. And, if you want to make money playing backgammon, basically you have to put up with it. And I just found it after a while, I just couldn't do it anymore. I just didn't found it too distasteful.
That's one of Svobodny's biggest strengths. He's a real sweetheart to be around, and he apparently is able to put up with this, and is so pleasant to these big losers that they still enjoy playing with him.
Yeah.
But he's an excellent player and a nice guy to be around. All right. Changing subjects. I write a weekly column for the Las Vegas Advisor. This week's column is about adjusting your play on a particular hand depending on whether or not you're going to leave a tip. So if you're somebody who tips at least $20 for a $4,000 royal flush, you should play it this way. If you're somebody who doesn't tip that much or more on a $4,000 royal flush, you should play it that way. So, Richard, are there any analogous table game situations where your tipping strategy can determine your playing strategy?
Well, I mean, tipping is a really important subject for advantage players. And people have strong feelings about it.
Both ways or all
ways. Both ways. Yeah, yeah, both ways.
There's more than two ways, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, when you're counting cards, your edge is so small that, especially in the beginning, you know, when you're playing small stakes, you just can't afford to tip. You just can't. You're not making enough money to be able to tip anything. And, I mean, even though you might be betting up to $100 or more dollars, you know, if your win rate might only be $20 an hour or $25 an hour. Now, if you have a $100 bet out there and you bet a dollar for the dealers, all it does is piss them off more. It doesn't help you. So, so I think, you know, if you're kind of a small stake card counter, you should just not tip at all. Now, whatever you're playing though, I think it's important to try to estimate your EV as best you can. And then if you want to tip, think about how much you can afford to tip in relation to what your EV is. But in good games, and by good games, I'm talking about games where you have a really high hourly win rate. Well, those games, basically you're trying to figure out how you can extract the most amount of money out of the casino. And often those games, the dealer can basically just kill the game for you without even realizing it sometimes. So often you want to keep the dealer happy. You need to keep the dealer happy. And part of that is tipping him or her. And sometimes it means having conversation with them or doing whatever you need to do to keep them happy. And it also helps with the bosses and, you know, so... Yeah, I mean, there's no easy answer. But it's something everyone struggles with. I think some people handle it better than others. But yeah.
Yeah, in video poker, the edge is probably smaller than it is in blackjack, and but tipping situations are relatively rare. You basically, in video poker, you don't tip unless you have some sort of W2G at a minimum, where it's some sort of a hand pay. Well, some casinos, you can get a hand pay for $1,000. But so if you get $800 and there's no hand pay at all, then there's no tipping opportunity. So if you're playing quarters, the biggest thing you can get in most games without a progressive is $1,000, and so there's no tipping opportunities, so you never tip. For dollars, well, there's a royal for $4,000. In some games, you know, you can have aces with a kicker for $2,000, or some games you get over $1,200, but not many outside the royal. For $5 games, it can get to be every four of a kind or higher, and that's every 400 hands. That's a significant frequency. In the bigger games, it can be... I play at a place called Dottie's, and I wrote about it a few weeks ago, where there you want W2Gs. And I play at stakes where I get W2Gs like every 50 hands. And some players have it a way so they get them more often than that by playing other variations. But
and so how do you handle tipping in that?
In Dottie's, I basically don't. In most casinos, I don't tip. The one casino I tip at least $5 on every W2G is the South Point. But the South Point is they also let me teach classes there. And getting the employees upset at me, making a scene in any way that gets upstairs to the bosses.
Sure, that would be bad. But is $5 enough to make them happy?
Well, on jackpots of 4,000 and less, yeah, because they're also getting it at 1,200. On the occasions when I get dealt something and get for a $20,000 or $40,000 jackpot, then the tips are larger. But But generally, I make sure they have no problems with me whatsoever, and no scenes. If there's a dispute about a seat or something, which sometimes happens because there's more dogs than bones, I make sure that I'll take the worst of it at the South Point to make sure there's no scene at all. Okay, good. Another writer that we frequently talk about is James Grosjean. He writes a periodic blog for the Las Vegas Advisor. It's called Beyond Numbers. A recent article is about whether a new locals casino in an area would be an economic revival or a black hole that sucks all the money out of the area. What do you think a new casino would be, Richard?
Yeah, I agree with him. I think, in most cases, the casinos, those kind of local casinos, turn out to be a bad thing for the neighborhood rather than a good thing. It creates some number of jobs, but, you see the degenerates in there, day after day. And, I think it was better for us as a society when there were fewer casinos. You had to travel somewhere, save up your money and travel somewhere to go gamble. Obviously it's much better for me as a player to have casinos everywhere. I do think that they're probably a net negative on most of the cities in America where they've come.
Yeah, here Rich and I live in Las Vegas, where there's, depending on how you define casinos, do you include Dottie's? There can either be 30 or 150, depending on how you define it. But you can find some place to gamble everywhere.
Yeah, and people that move here, they learn, right? They blow their money for the first year, and they learn either not to gamble or a lot of them move out of town, because they can't control themselves. So, but it does seem like everyone goes through that learning process, when they move here, learning to handle gambling one way or another.
Yeah, gambling when you live here is not nearly as exciting as it is for a 3-day weekend twice a year.
Right, right.
Let me talk about our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Big promotion this month is the $600,000 April showers. Every night, April 1st to April 30th at 8:15, one person's name is going to be called for $10,000. That person has 4 minutes to show up, or they end up getting $500 in free play. And another name is called. Eventually, somebody's going to get the $10,000, and a total of 20 people will get $500 of free play. They have a week to collect it. Maximum 10,000 tickets to earn between 9 o'clock the night before and 8 o'clock the night of the drawing. The barrel is emptied after each drawing. Now, this Saturday, April 30th, is the last day of the promotion. There has been at least an extra $30,000 in free play, which means at least 60 people. So they earned it, but they did not collect it within a week. Well, Mr. Gaughan has this philosophy that if he advertises $600,000 giveaway, he's going to give away $600,000. So this Saturday, they're going to give away all the extra money that hasn't been collected. So it's going to be at least 30,000. I'm not quite sure how the money in the last week, they don't know exactly how much is going to be collected because they have 7 days to pick it up. Presumably they're going to make an estimate how many of those are going to be extra 10,000 giveaways and how many are going to be the free play. I don't know the answer to that, but they're giving it away. And so whatever EV you would normally have for that Saturday night, it's going to be significantly more because they're going to be giving over more than twice as much as they usually, probably three times as much as they usually do. I will be there. At the Palms, between now and the end of April, which is this Saturday, they have drawings every Friday and Saturday night, 7:15 p.m. You must be present to win. Five winners, top prize $2,500, total prize is $5,000. Each of the five people get a chance at the $1 million match game. 16,000 to 1 against hitting it, but it's $1 million. PFP, play for prizes, until this Friday, you earn Kohl's gift cards, K-O-H-L apostrophe S. And next week, they will start a new PFP program. Gift cards are given away at 0.2%. You keep your points. Your net points. And it's sort of a way they do double points. The Sundays in April, there is no more. But tomorrow, Wednesday the 27th, is double point day. So that's a way you're actually including the Kohl's gift card is like triple points. There's no limit on the number of points you can earn. Videopoker.com. It's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games, including quick quads. The game of the week is 100 play with quick quads. Quick quads is a 6-coin per line game where you get paid for all natural quads and quick quads. A quick quad consists of a 3-of-a-kind, and the other two cards add up to the rank of the 3-of-a-kind, such as 10, 10, 10, 8, 2, or 2, 2, 2, ace, ace. Since you get these 4-of-a-kinds so much faster and quickly, the 6 coins per line instead of only get paid 5 coins per line makes the numbers work out. Personally, it's my most favoritest game. I like this game if it's at the same approximate return as other games. It is just a lot of fun. All right.
Before we move on, I forgot at the top of the show, I meant to say, we are always looking for guests. So we would love to hear if you have suggestions for guests, if you think you would be a good guest. We're definitely looking for people in all different areas. I'm particularly interested currently in horse racing guests, sports betting guests, whatever area, you know, you think, you know, feel free to contact us. You can email us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com and send us your suggestions.
One of the things earlier when we were talking about tipping is we had a guest on the show about a year ago named Small Cap. He's a blackjack player and he tips more than most people did. And so when he was on the air, he explained why he did, and he's been extremely successful. I believe he's going to be our guest next Tuesday. Now, Richard and I taped the show earlier today. And if blackjack is something you're interested in at all, I strongly recommend you catch the show next week.
Yeah. He's a lot of fun. And so, yeah, I also would recommend everybody check that out.
All right. So, Richard, how do people get in touch with us?
Well, we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can sign up to get the show delivered to you every week at iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. For an archive of all of the old shows, you can find those at bobdancer.com.
All right. So, thank you, Richard. I guess thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good afternoon.